as the tools mature, you know, people will just naturally reach for Excel less and less, and it will just live where, you know, where it belongs, around the edges.
Welcome to The Roll Forward, a podcast for the next wave of finance leaders, especially those looking to transform their roles by making smarter, faster, and more profitable business decisions using the power of technology and a forward-looking approach to finance. Listen in to learn how to get out of the back office trenches and become a more strategic partner within your organization.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Roll Forward podcast. I'm Joe Garofalo, and this episode is brought to you by Mosaic, a strategic finance platform that transforms the way business gets done. Today, I'm here with Graham Stanton, who co-founded Peloton in 2012. During his time there, he wore multiple hats, overseeing everything from technology to legal to the people team, performance marketing, and most notably for our podcast, he oversaw finance. Graham scaled Peloton from the startup back in 2012 to the household name that it is today. And he's taken all that experience and co-founded a company called Avise, which is aiming to unlock the power of accounting to help drive business forward. Graham, thanks so much for joining me today. We're super excited to have you on the Roll Forward podcast. Can you give the audience a quick introduction and a little bit of background on yourself?
Yeah, well, thank you, Joe. I'm really happy to be here. That was a pretty good intro right there. Yeah, I'll throw in that, you know, I started my career as a software engineer before moving to the business side a few years out of college. But yeah, I always kind of, you know, took that software development analytical, you know, view to things, and, you know, maybe that gave me a lower tolerance for using bad software for any function.
I love that. And that kind of brings us to our topic for today's conversation, which is really focused around the CFO tech stack and back office technology. And Graham, in a Forbes article that was highlighting Avise and the new company that you're building, you mentioned something about having a career-long frustration with back office technology and with finance tooling. Can you explain a little bit about that frustration and how it led you to start Avise?
Yeah, absolutely. I can say in general, yeah, I always had the sort of the bad view of back office software. Yeah, my first paid programming job was in an IT department at some corporation where the people developing the software kept blaming the users for bad data in the system. And, you know, I wanted to pull my hair out saying, you know, oh, it's your bad software. And that's leading to that. But, you know, that was late 90s. And unfortunately, nothing's improved since then, for the most part. Yeah, starting to see some green shoots now. But yeah, when I was at Peloton, you know, I was kind of right in the middle of it. Everything we used was clunky. We used QuickBooks Desktop, which, you know, did its job. It was fine, but nothing more than that. Anytime we tried to go beyond kind of, you know, what it offered out of the box, you know, we hit some real, real big issues. You know, and then at one point we had to upgrade to an ERP, and that's when I learned that, yeah, sort of real enterprise technology, yeah, you know, is worse than, you know, anything I'd seen up to that point.
For sure. Talk a little bit more about that ERP transition. I've been through some really long implementations. I think when they go well, it takes at least 6 months, and when they go not so well, it could take up to a year. How was your transition?
I think it was 2 years or more, depending on, you know, what you count as done. It was a big disillusionment. I mean, I'd never used an ERP before. We'd gotten to a point at Peloton when, you know, we had a fairly complex business, and it was tough. You know, it was tough to keep track of everything, you know, both from the standpoint of getting the books done to actually understanding the business. And I foolishly thought that moving to an ERP would solve both of those problems. And I mean, it's right there in the name, enterprise resource planning. I mean, that's what these systems are designed to do. And yeah, from my perspective, moving to an ERP really just added a huge headache. And it was a necessary evil. There was, you know, no alternative. Any alternative would have been worse. But, you know, in terms of closing our books, in terms of getting our accounting done, and in terms of understanding our business, all that progress was done based on, you know, custom internal work. Yep. And yeah, the off-the-shelf software, you know, the very expensive off-the-shelf software that, you know, required, you know, really hordes of people to operate, you know, a bunch of in-house hires, implementers, consultants, two consultants, you know, just on and on. It didn't add to that process. I mean, it was a useful repository of the end result of some of the data we generated. But even then, it was only a summary. So we could produce our financial statements from it, but we had to do a lot of custom work to get the data in. And then any analysis, like the granularity wasn't in the system, so we needed to use other platforms anyway.
Graham, I've had a lot of the same frustrations around the ERP system being more of this backwards-looking newspaper from last month, not really driving any of the analysis, especially not in real time. What were some of the other tools that you used at Peloton that helped plug the gaps that the ERP couldn't fill?
Yeah, I really like that view of what an ERP is. And it's so slow, and it's really just the headlines. And that's assuming you're using it right in the first place. Yeah, you can't use it to drive your business. So at Peloton, I mentioned we had a number of internal systems, external systems. So we built our own e-commerce system. We integrated with Stripe to take payments. We had our own system, obviously, for tracking workouts, for doing the subscription billing and tracking, and various external systems for deliveries, et cetera. Really, our only hope to close the gaps was to pull all that data into a data warehouse, which was very separate from the ERP. It required a dedicated team just to get the data in there. And then we put Looker on top. We had countless Looker reports. And I think at one point I counted 800 Looker views go into that. And hundreds of canned reports on top of those, maybe thousands. That was only kind of sort of usable for the business team. So we also had data analysts whose job it was to pull reports on request or kind of configure it exactly as people needed. And that got us our real-time information. It meant that the turnaround on new analysis was depending on the proficiency of the user, maybe a little slower than ideal. And one of the weaknesses was it didn't necessarily tie to the core financials just because of the way the data flowed. And it was all, in theory, accurate, but that led to another big headache when we were getting ready to go public and needed to guarantee that absolutely everything tied down to the penny.
Totally. Especially with all the accounting to GAAP and cash effects that happen through multiple sets of data, it's really hard to tie that granular transaction data to your headline financial numbers and have that beautiful bridge that mm-hmm. connects the dots. When you think about the pieces of the modern CFO tech stack, what are some of the characteristics or features that you think will make the back office less painful in the future?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. For sure that that real-time view is going to be critical. I mean, any company that actually changes from month to month isn't going to be satisfied looking at last month's data, or data that's 2 months old if the close actually takes an additional month. And I think the other part really is usability. And I think that we're getting to a point where people aren't accepting that, this tool gets the job done, but it's a huge pain to do it. Especially startups or modern businesses that have a lot to get done. Yep. And there's not going to be so much tolerance for, you can technically do this. I mean, it feels like it should take 20 minutes, but it's going to take you all day or all week. And you don't have it. You've got things to do to actually drive the business forward.
Yep. I love that. And even when you mention a tool like Looker, which we absolutely love, there is a pretty steep learning curve to get a tool like Looker up and running, to have the Look ML to write those queries that produce all the metrics that you need. So I think for the future of the modern CFO tech stack, that skill set to wrangle and manipulate that data needs to get a bit easier. And it also needs to be in the hands of people like us leading the finance team versus the engineering folks who do know how to manipulate that data at a mass scale. Another topic that I really like that I saw you talk about in the Forbes article is this concept of consumer grade enterprise technology. I think one of the things that Peloton has really nailed was making the fitness industry, which was kind of older and less futuristic, feel really friendly and feel really new and fresh. That same approach, I think, that you took to Peloton needs to be taken to financial technology, and specifically that of the CFO tech stack. Can you talk a little bit about consumer-friendly, design-based product for finance?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's definitely a parallel. Yeah, I think in the fitness space, to the extent that there were any electronics integrated into equipment, it was blinking lights in a circle. And in 2012, I went to an equipment conference, and one of the manufacturers very eagerly showed me their new iPad app that was literally an iPad app of blinking lights in a circle. And it's the attitude of like, well, you're doing a workout because you know you're supposed to or you have to, so you'll put up with anything. And it's the same attitude for back office software. It's like, well, these people are paid to do it. We actually heard recently from someone who met with a sales representative from one of the top ERPs, seven-figure per year software, where the salesperson outright told them, well, we're not going to win any usability awards. But they get the job done, technically, supposedly. As I was talking about a little bit, with the previous question, the modern company, people don't have the time for that. And people are losing the patience for that. And we already have this world of consumer software that's always been the case where consumers will only use software that is intuitive, that they enjoy using, and if it's not, they'll move on. And people are starting to have that same attitude toward the software that they have to use for work. So I do think that there's a real opportunity here just to kind of take some of the same people who've built consumer software, some of the same mindset, and be inspired by these people, and say, well, let's just pretend our end users, in a work environment are just as picky as end users in a consumer environment, and build it as if it was for the consumers.
I love that. It's such a great philosophy, and it's funny that wasn't a thought with all the prior technology that was built. And it does look like at Avise, you guys were able to bring over Eric Wong, who was the original UX creator of Peloton. How's his transition going from building fitness software to finance software?
Yeah, I think that one was a real coup. Yeah, Eric is an old colleague, an old friend of mine. We first worked together, I think it was in 2007 at IAC. He designed all the original screens for Peloton, and the evolution there for a while. He designed the Peloton logo. He's got a real eye to consumer experiences. He had never built back office software. He'd never built any financial software. He had no experience at all in this category. And we had advised that was perfect. We needed a set of eyes, unpolluted by all the bad choices that have been made over the past five decades.
I love that, because when you have that first principles approach, you can make so many things that are just historically accepted better because you're looking at them with a fresh set of eyes. And I think that's exactly what financial software, back office, CFO tech stack needs for this future wave of technology to really win the market. Which brings me to our next question here, which is, where do you stand, I guess, on the software versus Excel debate? Mm-hmm. Do you think that the future eliminates spreadsheets or just makes up for their weakness?
Yeah, I think the question's a good one, but it's also sort of a false dichotomy. Excel has its place. Excel is amazing software. It's taken over the world, for a good reason. And, still, I spend a lot of time in Excel or Google Sheets or or whatever spreadsheet tool I'm using. It's great for prototyping, and it's great for one-time analysis. It's great for that one process that this one company has that is completely unique to itself and doesn't fit anywhere else. Yep. But anytime it's being used like a database, when as a source of truth, I think that's a big red flag that software would be a better choice in this in this scenario. And I know that that's often the case with finance teams. It certainly was for us at Peloton. And anytime you have an overly complex Excel spreadsheet that's just being used over and over and over again, that's another sign that maybe this could have been, you know, better done, you know, in a tool. And I think, you know, as the tools mature, you know, people will just naturally reach for Excel less and less, and it will just live where, you know, where it belongs, around the edges.
Yep. I love that. I think it'll always have a place in the CFO's toolkit. But when you only have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And I think that's the world that we've had to live in with kind of the shortcomings of technology. And a lot of folks have been burned by those 2-year-long implementations of existing legacy financial tooling. And I think there's going to have to be kind of this education and this next wave of marketing that happens to get CFOs thinking that, like, there actually can be a better way. And excited that you're along the journey helping build that next wave. Next question for you here, and this is really for a lot of the Mosaic customers that are listening. A lot of our customers have different revenue streams. It's hard enough to get the CFO tech stack to produce the outputs that you need when you have one software revenue stream. You guys at Peloton had several. There was the hardware component of the bikes, there was the software, there was the live classes, and everyone here, if they don't already have one, should have some Peloton apparel because it's great. Can you talk about how the CFO tech stack, how you made it work for so many different revenue streams?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't easy. And I'll say that out of necessity, as we were building up the finance function and we were, you know, actually maturing our financials and, you know, even, you know, moving towards going public. I mean, we started off by doing a lot of our revenue recognition, you know, booking, you know, just outright booking of revenue based on Excel spreadsheets. And, you know, we got to a point when, yeah, sort of the big Excel spreadsheet now for all hardware revenue would crash someone's laptop half the time. So it's they'd open it, you know, wait 10 minutes, either it would work or their laptop would, you know, their Excel would crash, and they'd kill the process and try again. And then we partitioned it. Yeah, you know, we turned it into multiple spreadsheets. And yeah, obviously that doesn't work for analysis. If you want to know kind of, you know, how's the business doing, you want to start tracking revenue per customer. Maybe you're curious about, you know, people acquired via this marketing campaign. Can I estimate their LTV? Then if all that data is locked in these spreadsheets and not getting into the financials until, you know, months later, and that's kind of useless. So we did a lot of this analysis in Redshift and Looker. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, we had custom SQL for parts of it. And it was this big, intensive thing. And when it worked, it was kind of unfortunate that it took so much effort. And when it came time to go public and make this process SOX compliant, we had a whole other team of engineers build a new subledger, you know, for all revenue that then made its way also to Redshift and in summarized form to our ERP.
Yep.
And so, yeah, giant headache and, yeah, just a lot of, yeah, kind of duct tape along the way. And I think a mature process in the end, but in hindsight, and it's kind of sad that, you know, Peloton needed to be, you know, on the precipice of going public to actually pull it all together. And just the number of people involved in that is, you know, painful to think about.
Yep. And that is, I think, the world-class finance function is when you can take data from all your point solutions, use ETL to pipe them into a database, write code to, like, join and blend all those different tables together to give you the right views so that you can see everything in one place and in close to real time. And that world-class structure is every company is trying to build it, and it's every company rebuilding it from scratch each time. So I think for the CFO tech stack, there's this chance to build kind of that meta layer that will just snap into all those tools and automate a lot of, like, that SQL writing and creating those views so that you can get that stack up and running faster from day one instead of building it, leading up on the roadshow towards the IPO. So I think that's a really big area for disruption in the CFO tech stack. And it's very aligned with what we're trying to build at Mosaic. But Graham, thanks so much for talking about some of the pain and the struggles of the CFO tech stack at Peloton. It's really exciting to hear. Question for you now on, like, just summarizing everything. If you had the right finance and accounting tech stack before that IPO, what were some of the things or some of the insights that maybe you would have done differently or changed?
Now that's a really interesting question. Surface level improvements. Yeah, would have been the CEO never would have needed to think about the letters ERP at all. The fact that our CFO tech stack implementation ended up being one of the biggest initiatives for the company as a sign of how broken the whole ecosystem is, or at least was. So that already would have been a big deal. But if we'd had that level of insight much earlier on, I think about just how dramatically better our operations would have been. I mean, we were a very fast growing company, and when you think of the size Peloton is now, and you think if I think, Peloton maybe spent 10% too much in this area early on in its existence, that's a rounding error in the financials of Peloton today. So, it's just kind of like, grow fast and do what you have to do. But the reality doesn't work out that way. I mean, we always struggled to raise money until we had, a very large number of paying subscribers. VCs always doubted the business model. Everything was a struggle. And, in hindsight, whereas like a lot of that struggle was just kind of poor visibility into the core economics of the engine. We knew what was important for the company and kind of how to prioritize, but in terms of presenting the business, if we would have had that insight in terms of like, okay, this is how to do manufacturing, this is how to manage our third party logistics relationship. I think back to marketing and the sheer amount of work we did on insight there. If we had that properly coupled to the rest of the business, we probably would have spent less on marketing in some areas and dramatically more in others. And I get frustrated at the time sink, due to having bad insight and bad software to use. But the impact to the business is so much bigger than that. I mean, it could have been the difference between success and failure. I think. Yeah, we're lucky we pulled through. Yeah, the degree of difficulty was so hard. I can only imagine the companies out there that they would be very successful today, but had to close shop before they ever were given a chance.
That's such an insightful perspective. I would have never guessed that with all the success that Peloton has. And our friend Jack McCullough has a really good quote. He says, like, CEOs should value a CFO that is a really good storyteller. And you can only tell that really good story of the success that Peloton was having if you have good insights into the numbers and you can piece together all of those analytical insights about the supply chain, about the 3PLs, about the marketing data to tell that story. So it's really cool to hear that, if you had better technology, mm-hmm. that storytelling would have been easier. Obviously, it doesn't matter to all those VCs. I think you guys proved them very wrong, which is, I always love that. But congrats on all the success. I think last question for you here today is, we always ask this to all of our guests. If somebody's starting their career in finance and aspiring to be a CFO or head of finance, what's one thing you recommend or wish they knew when you were starting your career?
Yeah, I think just to stick with the theme of this conversation, I think a solid understanding of, of data. To do it more broadly. Through what we're doing at Avise, I would tilt that a little bit to, it's good to understand accounting, but ultimately accounting is really just the data underlying the business. And flowing through to then, the story of the business, you can only tell a good story about how the business is doing based on the underlying data. That's kind of the CFO's job to be able to interpret the data and tell that story. I think there are a lot of operational aspects of being a CFO that are independent, but almost all of them are helped by having that really good base for knowing where everything comes from.
Yeah, I think that's so true. I mean, a degree in finance, a degree in accounting, those things are table stakes now, and it seems like the future is actually being able to understand the data and all the different data sources and how to piece them together to tell that story. So I 100% agree. Cool. Before I let you go here, Graham, what is your favorite type of ride over on the Peloton? I myself am a low impact guy, but curious to hear what you enjoy.
No, well, that's a good question. I mean, I love all of them. I love the low impact rides as well. I use them as fillers, as recovery. I'll go to the extreme opposite though and say, yeah, I love the HIIT and the Tabata just for the, you know, for how good a workout you can get in such a short period of time. But I've made the mistake of doing those too often. And yeah, really got to mix it up.
For sure. For sure. Well, very cool. For folks that are looking for information on Avise, and we over at Mosaic are our customers and are really enjoying what you guys are building, kind of unlocking that accounting function to drive business forward. Where can folks go to learn more about what you're building at Avise?
Well, we have just recently launched our beta. So yeah, please go to our website, avise.com, A-V-I-S-E, and yeah, just drop your email address in there, or you know, feel free to email me directly, graham@avise.com.
Cool. Well, Graham, thanks so much for being here. Really enjoyed the conversation and looking forward to staying in touch shortly.
Yep. Thanks so much, Joe. Really enjoyed
it. Awesome. Thanks, Graham. Bye.
Thank you for checking out this episode of The Roll Forward. This show is powered by Mosaic, a strategic finance platform that transforms the way business gets done. If you enjoyed what you learned in this episode, make sure to follow The Roll Forward wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, or visit mosaic.tech/podcast to get immediate access to all of the latest episodes.